All right, so we are holding on Lamed Amud Bey's 5 lines from the bottom. The Mishnah had said that you have to stand daven mitoch kovad rosh, literally means with a feeling of a heaviness in the head, which we said Rashi says hachno, I mean humility, submission, whatever. And we mentioned, so the Gemara started discussing where do we know that from. We brought a couple of possibilities. We ended up saying we learn it from the fact that the pasuk says v'gilu bir oda, rejoice in trembling, which means v'makim gilot shantehe oda. Where there is rejoicing, there should also be trembling. You don't just want to have that a person that has to be happy, a person has to serve Hashem b'simcha, but there also has to be a sense of trembling, a sense of yiras shamayim in it as well, so it doesn't go overboard. So in this
question was having both together.
So that's one thing. So in Tanya, it talks about that you could have both together, but you do. We're going to talk about soon. We're going to talk about in the Gemara about simcha shal mitzvah. When the simcha is because of a mitzvah, then and we're going to have an example of that now. Actually, then you're able to have both together. So here are some examples. Abaya have a Yosef kameid rabba. Abaya was sitting at a Talmud in front of rabba. Chazia to have a kabodach tova. Rabba saw that Abaya was very very happy. More so than usual, and too much, Rashi says, to the point where it looked like he's Purik oil, like he's throwing off the yoke of Hashem's kingship. So Rabbi tells him, you know, the give a virodity, you know, the prophet says, there has to be trembling with the rejoicing. Mm-hmm. So where's the trembling? Amalei, so Abai answers him, I'm not tefillin manachna. I am wearing tefillin now. So what does tefillin have to do with anything? So Rashi says, the fact that I'm wearing tefillin demonstrates that I'm serving Hashem, and that I consider Hashem my king, and therefore I'm not going overboard in my simcha. There is, together with my simcha, there is a feeling of that I'm in the presence of Hashem. So the different explanation that Rabbeinu Yonah says is that what Abaya is saying is, for the last couple of days he hadn't been feeling well. He'd been having stomach trouble, and the din is, under such circumstances, you don't wear trillin, because the person may not be able to control himself from passing gas or even from leaking out or whatever while he's wearing them. So therefore, for the last couple of days, Abaya is saying, I wasn't able to wear trillin. Now that I'm able to again, my simcha is in the fact that I'm able to wear trillin. So it's a simcha shal mitzvah, mm-hmm. and therefore it's not an inappropriate level of simcha. Mm-hmm. Similarly, Rabbi Yirmiyah have a Yosef Kamed Rav Zera. By the same token, Rabbi Yirmiyah was sitting in front of Rav Zera as a Talmud. Chazia to have a Kabodach Tova. And again, Rabbi Zera sees that Rabbi Yirmiyah is being unusually happy and maybe too much. Amalei, so he says, the Pasuk says, B'chol Etziv Yiyah Moisev Siv. In all sadness, there should be some profit. There should be some gain. In other words, that Rashi translates that when a person acts at least on the outside, that they're a little bit sad, not sad per se, but at least like serious. Then there's profit, there's gain, there's reward in it. So again, why are you being so inappropriately happy? And again, Amalei, I'm not tefillin manachna, and Rabbi Yirmiyah says the same thing. I am wearing tefillin, so either the very fact that I'm wearing tefillin demonstrates that I am accepting on myself Olmalchus Shemayim. That I'm in fact right at the end of the Hilchos Tefillin, that when a person has tefillin on his head and on his arm, then that itself tends to make a person that he feels a little more humble and a little more submissive in front of Hashem. They say that the Rambam gets that from this Gemara over here, that we see that even though Abaya and Rabbi Yirmiyah are being exceptionally happy, and they rebeim thought to the point where it looks like maybe they're being poured with oil, but they're saying the very fact that I'm wearing tefillin demonstrates that not like that. Makes it not only demonstrates, but makes it that it's not like that, that there is, I know where to begin and where to end. I know what limits to put on it. Or again, you have Rabbeinu Yonah's explanation that he's saying that I haven't been able to put on tefillin in the last couple of days, and now for the first time I'm able to because I'm feeling better. And that itself is my simcha.
At the same time, because the one very same thing, I put on tefillin, I'm humbled by that, and I have yira. But
you also have the simcha of the mitzvah, right? Because you have the simcha that you're able to be serving Hashem, right?
So that's
why the Gemara is bringing this up, right? As far as Rav Yirmiyah and Rav Zera in general, by the way, you find in a number of places in Shas that Rav Zera was very serious more so than the average. And Rav Yirmiya, so you even find places, the Gemara in Nida, for example, where it mentions that Rav Yirmiya mentions a halacha, a kind of funny halacha, in an effort to get Rav Zeira to laugh. And even so, Rav Zeira didn't laugh, because Rav Zeira held, as we're going to have soon, that you're not supposed to be laughing too much. So.
Is it true
or not? No, even with the fascists, with or without. Okay. On other examples, Mar Brei de Ravina Ovid Hilula Lebrei, Mar Brei de Ravina one time was making a wedding for his son, Chazanu L'Rabbanan D'Havu Kabad Chitova. He saw that the Chachamim there were in an exceptionally happy and jolly mood, so he needed to temper it somehow. Aiti Kosta de Mokra Bas Arame Azuzi, so he took an expensive cup, which was worth 400 zuz, the tover kamayu, and he broke it in front of them. But that lowered their level of simcha. So you have Ben Yehoyada talks. First of all, it's not Baal Tashkas if it's for a constructive purpose, and here it was for a constructive purpose in order to calm them down and make them realize, you know, there's a limit to your simcha and all. But also Ben Yehoyada says that maybe, for example, this cup had a crack in it already, so he was gonna be throwing it out anyway. But it wasn't a noticeable crack. So as far as they knew, he took a very expensive cup and broke it. But really, he knew that. Yeah. As far as kosa de mokra, by the way, it means literally an expensive cup. There are mefarshim who learn that it means a cup with etched designs on it. Okay. Anyway, whatever. It was very expensive. Why? Okay. Rav Ashi Ovid Hilula Lebrei. Similarly, Rav Ashi was making a wedding for his son. Chazanu L'Rabbanan D'Havu Kabad Chitova. Same thing. He saw that the chachamim there are being happy to an inappropriate degree, where again there's a problem with prikas oil, where it looks like they're throwing off the yoke of Hashem's kingship. Aiti Kosta D'Zugisa Chivarta. So he took a cup of white glass, a clear glass, which was very expensive in those times. The Torah Kamayo, and he broke it in front of them. But Asiva, when they were saddened by that. So Tosfos says this is where we get the minhag of breaking a cup, of breaking a glass by the chuppah. Other mafarshim say not necessarily. Here it was because of the specific purpose, because they were being inappropriately too happy. Ordinarily, the reason why we do it is zeicha l'churban, actually. Okay, different mafarshim talk about why if it's glass, is there's the idea that a person is somewhat similar to glass. They're made from earth, like glass is made from sand. It's blown with air. Glass is made by blowing air into it, like Vayipachvach of Nishmaskayim. When it's broken, then in principle it can be melted down and remade. When the glass is broken, it can be ground back down into the sand that it was made out of and make it over again. In the same way the person comes back alive, but Chesed Meisim. By the way, there are other places in the Gemara where it mentions that after the Churban, Zugisa Chivarta, this kind of white glass, disappeared. Now, this is a few hundred years after the Churban. So Tosfos elsewhere talks about that not necessarily does it mean it completely disappeared, it just means it became much rarer. During the time of the Second Mikdash, it was more common to be able to have white glass, clear glass. Afterwards, it became much rarer, but it still existed, as we see in this story. Okay. Another example, by the wedding of Ma'abrei de Ravina. So before we had that Ma'abrei de Ravina was making a wedding for his son, and he broke the expensive cup in front of him. Now it was a generation earlier, by Ma'abrei de Ravina's own wedding, they said to Rav Hamnuna Zuti, Lishri Lon Mar, sing us a song. Omlahu, and he also, he felt that they're going a little bit overboard with the simcha. Mar is the name. Mar means our Rebbe. Yeah. Well, Mar has two meanings. It means our Rebbe. It can also be a personal name. So Mar Brei de Ravina, that was
it. They say Mar Lishni.
No. This way, yeah. Omlahu, so he starts for them a song. Vai London Misnon. Woe to us, we're going to die. Woe to us, we're going to die. Again, with the idea of being of tempering their simcha a little bit. Amrilei anan manani basrach. So they say to him, what should we answer to you? What should be the chorus to such a song? Omlahu, hey Torah, hey mitzvah de magnu alon. The chorus should be, where is the Torah and where is the mitzvah that will protect us? So on one level, it's, as we're saying, he's telling them that he's singing the song in order to get them back into the proper frame of mind. Yes, you're happy by the wedding, but you always have to realize that it has a limit, as Gemara is going to go on to say now. There's a lot of different details in that. among others, why Dafka by a wedding? Is he mentioning Yom HaMitzvah? So there's an explanation, actually, that when you get down to it, a wedding is, why do we make weddings? Why do we make such a simcha by them? Precisely because people die. Eventually people die and they pass away from the world. That's why it's necessary for people to get married and have children in order to replace them. So therefore, those two things are very intimately tied together. Marshall says the double expression vaylon de mitznan is because there's two aspects in a person remembering that one day they're going to die. One is, we learned in the first parak, to use it as a weapon against the yetzer hara if necessary. A person's yetzer hara is getting the better of him. Yazkir lo yom ha-mitzvah. The ultimate thing is you remind him that one day you're going to die, and therefore that helps keep the yetzer hara at bay. So that's one. And the other one is, I think you want to elsewhere, and Shabbos talks about that shuv yom every same pirkei avos. Shuv yom echad, but the name is pasach, that a person should always do tshuva one day before he dies. So therefore, that's the double expression. And then the chorus, Hey Torah, Hey Mitzvah, also reflects those two things. Torah, which is used to keep the Yetzer Hara at bay, and Mitzvah, which a person has to be doing in the world, that a person has to be doing Mitzvah. A person has to be working on storing up Mitzvah while they're in the world.
It's all this whole problem with happiness after the home, right?
So now we're going to talk about that. Also, a person is not allowed to fill his mouth with laughter in this world, like the kind of laughter like you have, you know, like nowadays, you know, in text speak, LOL, you know, laughing out loud, rolling on the floor, laughing, all those kinds of things that you have in text speak or whatever. So a person is not supposed to do that in Olam Hazeh. What does it mean, Olam Hazeh? So one second, Shenemar. Oz yimalei tzchok pinu, as the pasuk says, then our mouths will be filled with laughter. Ol sheneinu rina, and our tongues with rejoicing, with singing. Emasai, when is that? As the pasuk continues, bisman sheyom rubagoyim higdol Hashem lasa semela. At the time when in the nations they say Hashem has done great things with this Jewish people. So now, are we talking about that the problem with yimalei tzchok pinu ba'olam hazeh is because it's during the time of the Churban? Or is it because even during the time of the Beis Mikdash, it's not yet the time of the Geulah HaSidah? You have different Rishonim talk about different possibilities with that. So in other words, if we lived in the time of the second Beis Mikdash, would we have been allowed to be Yimalei Tzchok Piv? According to one way of looking at it, yes, because the Beis Mikdash is standing and the Jewish people are not in Golus. According to the other way, no, because the fact is that you still don't have Ikkar Shechina B'Tachtonim, you still don't have Gilui Shechina in the world, you still don't have the Goyim are recognizing that Hashem, that we are Hashem's special people, Higdol Hashem Lachas Emela. That's also true, but okay, so let's say we didn't have the first Beis Mikdash. Fine, whatever, the point still remains. According to one way of looking at it, you would be allowed to because you have a Beis Mikdash, and according to the other way, you can't because the fact is you still don't have Mashiach's times yet and you still don't have the Geulah Shlemus.
I'm sure the level of Simcha during the first Beis Mikdash should have been much greater than after its destruction and the second
could be,
temple.
Yeah, could be.
That's
very possible.
If Tolnavi came and gave and warned them, they knew that there's going to be a destruction and there'll be a third Beis Mikdash, but ultimately, like,
well, they knew definitely when the second Beis Mikdash was built that they knew definitely that this isn't what was promised by the Nevi'im. In fact, you have Pesukim in Sefer Ezra. It was bigger, but still, you have it said, the Pesuk says in Ezra that the old people who remember the first Beis Mikdash, when the second Beis Mikdash was founded, they were crying because by comparison with the first Beis Mikdash, it didn't really look like much. It wasn't as fancy and everything, So I don't know if the Hamoin Am knew that there was eventually going to be a Churban and whatever. You have a Gemara in Nozir actually that talks about that maybe they should know based on Pesukim and Daniel or whatever. But did the Hamoin Am know? I don't know. But the Yechidus Gula, the Tamina Chachamim definitely knew that.
The first one was fancier?
Yeah. The second one was larger, but the last was longer. Yeah.
They were very nice. But the real Beis Hamikdash will be when the nations will recognize.
That's the point. So that's the right.
Then they recognize.
Right.
Then they will
recognize. Okay. Okay.
Right,
okay. Even
doing the first
yeah, yeah. Okay, let's start. Yeah. Okay.
Then there's going to be
singing. Right, so that's the point, in other words. Amru all of Arish Lakish, so they said about Rish Lakish, from throughout his life, he never filled up his mouth with laughter in Olam Hazeh. Meaning regarding things of Olam Hazeh. Mikishama Rav Yechanan Rabbi, ever since he heard this line from his Rebbe Rav Yechanan, then he made sure to change his behavior and not do that. Getting back to, we said in the Mishnah, Ein Omrim Lispalel Ela Mitos Kovad Rosh, so let's talk more about that. Tanan Abanan, Ein Omrim Lispalel, a person when he stands up to daven Shemoneh Esrei should not be doing it Lo Mitos Din, not when just before that he was learning dinim, which can be then he's going to be distracted during davening, thinking about the din, the complicated din, meaning a din Torah over here, the complicated din Torah that he was just learning, that he was just working on, and then it's going to distract him during davening. V'loy v'tech dvar halacha, and not from a word of halacha, which also means, in other words, a discussion in halacha. Elam v'tech halacha p'suka. Rather, it should be based on an established halacha, a simple halacha, something that you don't need to delve into it very deeply. The Gemara is going to give examples now, where therefore he's not going to be thinking about it during his davening. So what's an example of that? Amar Abaye, ki hodir abzera. An example of a halacha p'suka for that purpose is what Reb Zera said. The Amar Reb Zera, we learned this in Nida. B'nois Yisrael hachmir al atzman. The Jewish women made a chumra on themselves. Shafilu royes kipas dam tachadol. Even if they only see a drop of blood, a drop of dam nida, even the size of a mustard seed. Yosheves alei ashivanakim. She sits 7 clean days for it. Even though in theory the most that could do is make her a nida, and then she just needs to wait to the end of the 7 days. Or if during the 11 days of ziva, then it would mean that she's a shemeres yom kineged yom. But the B'nos Yisrael made a chumra on themselves. They always, any bleeding, they treat it as though she was a zav of gola. And she needs 7 full clean days. Because what said the point is, it's a halacha psukah. It's an established halacha.
It doesn't mean every halacha psukah is appropriate.
That's what, during the tefillah. But why not? You learned the halacha psukah. Now you're not going to be mahar on it during davening because finished. You learned the halacha. You understand it. And that's that. And then you go on to daven without thinking about it. In fact, by the way, you have in Nusach Saudi, they actually have this. The same way as we have in all Nuschos, you have Talmud Chachamim Mavim Shalom Ba'olam and Halichos Olam Loi and all that. They have the line also. Amar Rav Zera B'nos Yisrael Lach Mir Al Atzman. They have it as part of morning davening. We're going to have other examples. But here, the Nida is part of Torah as well. So that's
Okay, so that's it.
So therefore, so an example of our lock of Sukkah. Rava Amak Yehad Rav Hoshia. Rava says, I'll give you a different example. The example of Rav Hoshia then. The Amar Rav Hoshia, Marim Adam Al Tvua. So a person can make a trick with his Tvua, with his grain, or Machnisa B'Moshala, and bring it into the house, while it's still mixed with the chaff, with the straw and whatever. That way his animal will be able to eat from it and he'll be potter from meiser. What's going on over here? You have a din that minatora produce becomes chayev and meiser only if you had two things. You had gemar malacha, they finished the processing of it, which in this case would include removing all the straw and whatnot, and then it was brought to pnei habayis. It was brought through the front of the house. Then it becomes chayev in truma and meiser.
So when you had the what's it called?
Smoothing, the meruach. That smoothing is the gemar malacha. So that's the point. If you brought it in before meruach, then the fact that you brought it into the house is not yet kaveya for truma and meiser. So therefore, the rabbanon asked it. And you have to take truma and meiser from it before you eat it. But you're allowed achilas arai. You're allowed to eat a snack from it. An animal eating from it is the equivalent of achilas arai. Is the equivalent of a snack. Therefore, that's an example of a halacha, an established halacha, which, by the way, the truth is, actually, the halacha itself is not so simple, and you actually have achronim, that you actually have rishonim and achronim that deal with various angles on it in some detail, but the halacha itself, as we have it in the Gemara in front of us over here, is fairly straightforward. So a person learns that halacha, and then that's it. Then he can focus on that. The Iboy Sema Kihadi Rav Huna, another possibility we could do, like we could use the din that Rav Huna said, the Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Zera, Hamak is Dam, Mehemas Kodshim, if a person lets blood from an animal of Kodshim, also Bahana, that blood is also to have Anah from, Umoylan Boy, and Me'ila would apply to it. Usually, Rashi says, we usually say that Me'ila does not apply to blood of Kodshim, but that's blood of Kodshim that was sprinkled on the Mizbeach. So Midaraisa, then once the mitzvah was done with it, Me'ila no longer applies to it. Midrabanan it does because they wanted to sell it, so they sold it for fertilizer and raised money for the Beis Mikdash that way. But Midaraisa not. But over here, it was never sprinkled on the Mizbeach. It was blood that was let from the animal. So therefore, Me'ila would apply to it. So these are all examples. And Rashi says there's no kashas and tirusim on such things that you should have to think about. So therefore, you can learn these before you daven. And then that's that, therefore, and then it's a halacha p'suka, and then you can focus on that. Okay.
Why do you have to focus on halacha when he dove into the
Eved. 1 second, we'll talk about that. The simple meaning, the surface meaning of what the Gemara is saying over here is, because you want something which is a halacha psukha, you want something which is this, you want to be davening from after having learned Torah. It's important to learn Torah before you daven, but it should be the kind of Torah where then you're not going to be maharher, you're not going to be thinking about the ins and outs of it throughout davening, because during davening, you're supposed to be focusing on davening. You're supposed to be focusing on Pirush HaMilos, as we're going to say. You're supposed to be focusing on Hashem, so therefore, yeah. We'll talk about it in a second. We'll talk about the Siddur about this. But wait.
Right, exactly.
Okay, 1 second. Hold on. Okay, 1 second. Rabbanon Avi Kamasnissin, the other Chachamim, then when they, the other Chachamim in Rav Ashi's Yeshiva, when they would go to Davin, they would follow on Mishnah. They would say, on Mishnah says that you're supposed to Davin Elamitesh Kovid Roish. So therefore, they would take time. They wouldn't necessarily be learning a halacha pesukah. They would be working on getting into that frame of mind, into that serious, submissive frame of mind in front of Hashem. Rav Ashi Ovid Kibraisa, whereas Rav Ashi followed the Braisa and would learn a halacha pesukah. There's a different girsa over here, though, which is that the Braisa we're referring to is not the previous Braisa that we just quoted about halacha pesukah, but rather the next one, which is that the Gemara is going to mention that you should do dvar halacha, you should do something of simcha shel mitzvah. So according to that girsa and according to that understanding, Rabbi Yonah brings it, then we're referring to what Rav Ashi, we're going to explain now what another Braisa that says what Rav Ashi used to do, that he would shel zechadavin mitoch simcha shel mitzvah. Okay, so in Chassidus, it talks about the idea of what the Enron, we'll talk about it soon in connection with Ali Potter, Adam Mechaber, Elam Tesh Dvar Halacha. So in Chassidus, it talks about the idea, we know we've learned before, that Dvar Halacha, that Halacha in particular, is the purest expression of Hashem's will in this world. The Halachas are Tog of a Kisra Shal Torah, they're the crown of the Torah, they're Hashem's Rotsan. So therefore, that's an appropriate thing to be learning, to be doing before davening, because that way it brings in a person a sense of bittul. When you have, for example, because din or dvar halacha or whatever, then you have, I'm asking a question, you're answering, we're dueling back and forth in halacha, there's a certain yeshus that can get in there. I came up with this idea, I whatever, as opposed to halacha psukah, there's no I in it. There's no yeshus in it, and therefore it brings to a greater level of bittul. We learn in a braisa. When a person is standing up to daven, it shouldn't be from sadness.
You think there's more guys like than the Talmud Yerushalmi?
Well, you do actually have a Gemara in Sanhedrin that calls the Talmud Bavli Choshech. But we're not saying it's more gaivadik. We're saying there's more of a possibility of gaiva in there. When a person is learning, and oh, I was able to accomplish, I learned to gedicht a piece of Gemara, as opposed to halacha is halacha, doesn't it?
That was
seen with the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Yeah, okay. You don't stand to daven not from sadness, or laziness, or from joking, or sound conversation, or lightheadedness, being frivolous. Rashi explains, by the way, Kalos Rosh is, of course, the opposite of Kovid Rosh. Kovid Rosh means seriousness, therefore Kalos Rosh means a lightheadedness, means a casualness. Or dvarim b'teilim. So Rashi, by the way, explains sicha that we said lomitech sicha means like sonus, and dvarim b'teilim means stam idle talk. Elomitech simcha shal mitzvah. Rather, a person should be standing up to daven from having been involved in simcha shal mitzvah. We had before, for example, where Abaya and Rabbi Yirmiya are saying that we're having simcha shal mitzvah by the fact that we're wearing tefillin. And similarly, when a person is taking leave of another person, he shouldn't from his friend, he shouldn't take leave not from casual conversation of lachonus, or jokes, or lightheadedness, or idle talk, but rather from with a word of halacha, or hagoyt hagurah changes it to simcha shal mitzvah, same as the previous one. Thus we find that the Nevi'im of olden times, that they would finish their words with words of praise and comfort for the Jewish people. So we see you're always supposed to end on a happy note. You're always supposed to end on a note of simcha. We find that even many of the Nevi'im spend most of their sefer criticizing the Jewish people and telling them about their averus, and there's going to be a churban, and there's going to be a golos or whatever, but they always end on some note of simcha.
How do you know that Tanchumim and and praises it for the Jewish people rather than the Yiddishter.
Because that shvach means praise, it can be for either. For the, but
yes,
question,
well,
okay, but tanchumim definitely means for the Jewish people. But in any case, most of the Nevi'im, that what they end with is actually tanchumim for the Jewish people. And others, yes, shvach either for the Jewish people or for Hashem, whichever. You actually have, by the way, there's famously four svarim in Tanakh that don't end on such a happy note. And what you do is you repeat the next to last pasuk. We do that at the end of Eicha. We do that at the end of the Torah of Shabbos or Shchodesh, which is the last chapter of Yeshaya. So even then, in other words, even when even for example, the Yerushalmi talks about this. For example, Yeshaya ends on the note, "Behoyu geiroim l'chol baser," that the bodies of the Rishoyim are going to be burning, full of worms over there, and everybody's going to pass by and see them. So how is that ending on a happy note? And the Yerushalmi says, because that's talking about the bodies of the Goyim that were destroyed in Melchamas Gog and Magog. So therefore, it's a happy thing for the Jewish people that we see that our enemies are destroyed. Yeah. Okay.
I thought we're not supposed to rejoice about our enemy's death.
Okay, but it depends. But first of all, in this case, they're already dead. So therefore, yeah, the Gemara talks about in different places. There's a difference between the people themselves who were saved versus other people. There's a difference between, there are differences in there. But whatever, the point is, we're not even talking about rejoicing. The fact is, it's tanchumim. That's a comfort for the Jewish people to realize that eventually they'll get what those people will get what they deserve. Yeah. Okay. V'chein toner of Mori ba'breder Rav Huna breder of Yumi ba'aba. Similarly, Mori, the grandson of Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba, also taught a similar thing. When a person is taking leave of somebody else, he should only do it from a Dvar Halacha, because that way he will remember him or remember it. You have some of the Mephoshim explain, Zechrehu refers to the other person, and others explain Zechrehu refers to the Halacha. You'll remember the Halacha better that way. But the point is, so therefore, we see also, just like you shell just the daven from a dvar halacha, the same way when you're taking leave of somebody else should also be from a dvar halacha. So here you have, there's maimorim, there's a maimor of the Friedrich Rebbe, there's a maimor of the Rebbe, based on it, that begins with these words, ayipata adam mechaber, right? Where they talk about that it means on two levels. It means taking leave of another person, like, you know, after Tishrei, for example, is one of the times when the Rebbe talked about this, when the guests are getting ready to leave for Tishrei. It also, though, chaber over here also refers on a deeper level to Hashem. There comes a time when a person is, so to speak, taking leave of Hashem, either because, again, they've finished their Tishrei avodah and the Yaakov holach l'dar, okay, it's time to transition to the year-round avoda, or even within davening itself, you have those transitions from one type of avoda to the other. So it should always be mitzvah dvar halacha, where first of all dvar halacha is meloshim tiluch. I mean, something that makes you go, something that makes you move on in your avoda, not something that makes you static and standing still. And also, again, the idea is that halacha is more associated with bittul and with rus and elyon, for the reason that we said before, because there's not so much yeshus in it, and therefore that's the appropriate frame of mind to be that way. It won't be a true yipater. That way, even though you're taking leave, bagashmias, you're still connected with ruchnias, because you have the sense of bittul and the sense of you're setting your yesh, your I aside.
The union of yeshiva, the doctor is only
Yaakov Halacha Daka. It's primarily Yaakov Tishrei.
Yeah, not really yet.
No. Pihod Rav Kahana al v'yelir of Shimi ba'ashi mipumnara ad beit tenisi lebavo. As we have the example where Rav Kahana one time escorted Rav Shimi ba'ashi. Rav Shimi ba'ashi had visited town and now he was leaving. So Rav Kahana walked with him. We know the mitzvah of levoya, of walking with a guest, is a very important thing. So he walked with him from Pumnara until the place in Bavel where there were a lot of palm trees. And when they got there to this place where there's a lot of palm trees, Amalei Mar, so Rav Kahana asked Rav Shimi ba'ashi, Vade de Amri Inshi, is it true what people are saying, that these palm trees here in this part of Bavel have existed from the time of Adam Arishan until now? Amalei, and Rav Shimi ba'ashi answers, Id Kauten Milta de Rav Yosi b'Chanina. Actually, when you mention that, you remind me of something that Rav Yosi b'Chanina said. The Amr of Yosi b'Chanina, my dechiv, what does it mean? A pasuk in Yirmiyah, the Eretz Asher Lo'ova Ba'ish V'Layashav Adam Sham, that Hashem is describing to the Jewish people, how I took you to the desert, a place where no person passed through before, and no Adam settled over there. So what do you mean? If nobody even passed through there, of course, nobody settled there. So with the last part of the pasuk is redundant. Ela loy malach. Rather, the pasuk teaches you call eretz gozer aleha adam arishin l'yishuv. Any land which adam arishin back in his time decided that it should be settled, nityashva. That place became settled. V'chol eretz shaloy gozer aleha adam arishin l'yishuv loy nityashva. So therefore, in other words, he's telling him, this expression that you say, that people are saying, that that these palm trees exist from the times of Adamarishan, that's not quite exact. It's not that the trees themselves exist since the times of Adamarishan, but Adam was the one who decided that this place would be a good place for palm trees to grow. And therefore, there's this whole grove of palm trees over here, because the fact that it was determined what is going to grow here and what's going to be taking place over here goes back to Adamarishan. The trees themselves are younger.
Did that fall over the earth?
Yeah, apparently. In fact, you actually have a medrash that says, how is it that the snake got Chava alone and has the whole conversation with her and convinces her to eat from the Eitz Hadas? Where was Adam? One explanation is Adam was away on this tour, touring around the world and deciding what's going to be where. You have a Gemara, I think, in Chagiga, that talks about that Adam misofa olam bad sofa. Before the Chetei Tadas, Adam was much larger, so he could get around much faster than we can now. Yeah. Okay. Now, in what way is this a dvar halacha? So you have Maharaj Chai. It says, okay, sometimes you have a thing of agadja, an established piece of agadja can also be called halacha. Halacha, for this purpose, he says basically just, it doesn't mean an actual halacha as in something you have to do or not do. It means just a statement of fact. So this is also a statement of fact. But you have a couple of achronim talk about possibilities about what halachas are derivable from this. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, for example, talks about, you have a Mishnah in Sukkah that talks about this Sinei Hara Barzel, very hard lulavim that come from a certain place that are kosher. So he's wondering whether the lulavim from these palm trees are the same thing, or is it that maybe the palm trees themselves, if they exist all the way back from the time of Adamarishan, maybe the trees are too old and the lulavim from them are fossil. And he explains to him that no, the trees are younger. This is the fact that there are palm trees here goes back to other medicine times. So that's one example. Different other achronim talk about different other nakdaminas lahalacha. If somebody were to worship these trees as an avodah zarah, for example, would they become also if they were planted by people? Yes, if they existed there naturally since sheshes mevereshes, then no. Okay. There's a Rishimus where the Rebbe starts talking about the loy al yipater on mitzvah about mechaberoi that we just talked about mitzvah about halacha that because the halacha ties them together, and then the Rebbe goes on to talk about the deeper idea behind what's going on over here with these palm trees. These finisa de bavel, Rashi elsewhere explains that these they were palm trees, but the fruit of them was very bitter. Because the river that ran by there that watered them was bad water or whatever. So it represents a person who was on a very low level beruchnius, so low that you have a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says about that describes these trees as an example of, you have a pasuk repinuus bava v'leinu pasta. Hashem says, the Navi says in Hashem's name, we tried to heal bava and she couldn't be healed because like these trees are going to be bitter and going to be hard and whatever no matter what you do to them. So we're talking about a person on a very low level and was still saying that they still have an association with Adam Ha'elyon, with Adam Kadmon. They're still part of Hashem's thoughts. They're still Hashem determined in advance what's going to happen with them, and there still is the ability to turn them, just like we said, that Adam decided what's going to be settled and what's not. The same thing, the Machshava of Hashem can determine that the person is going to eventually be able to turn themselves over and become what they should be, become a proper palm tree rather than one of these hard and bitter palm trees. Yeah. Okay, another example. Rav Mordechai alveyel Rav Shimi Ba'ashi mehagrunya v'ad beikipi. Rav Mordechai escorted Rav Shimi Ba'ashi from Hagrunya to beikipi. V'amilad beidura. Others say until beidura. So here it doesn't say anything that they were talking about during the time. And so the Meiri says that maybe what the Gemara is saying by that is not necessarily do you have to talk about Dvar Halacha. If you're having a conversation anyway, then you should try to turn it to something of Dvar Halacha, like we just said. But if it happens that you can't think of anything, you're not obligated to force out something. Okay. Getting back to davening now, when a person is davening, he has to have a kavana towards Hashem. Avasholim, a simon ladover, a simon for that is like it says in the pasuk. Tochin libam takshivaz necha. You prepare their heart and your ear listens. In other words, when their heart is prepared and focused on Hashem and on Pirush Hamilus and whatever, then you Hashem will listen. So it's only a simon ladover because the pasuk is not telling you what to do. It's describing a situation, but we see that. Yeah. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Kachoy Minhoge Shor Rabbi Akiva. This was Rabbi Akiva's minhag when he was davening. Kreim Spalim Atzibur, when he would daven with the Tzibur. And as we know, the minhag is that the chazan waits for the rav or the greatest person in the tzibur before he starts chazar sashat. So he didn't want him in matriach, everybody. So he would finish up his shemana esrei relatively quickly because of the tircha of the tzibur. So he wouldn't shorten shemana esrei. He'd say all the words, but he would say it quicker than he would otherwise.
And the tzibur would...
We like this, so the tzibur doesn't have to wait for him. On the other hand, when Rabbi Akiva was davening by himself, you could have Adam, he would daven at such length, and he would be down so much. You could leave Rabbi Akiva starting to daven in one corner, and you'd find him at the end in the other corner. Why is that? Because of all the bowing and all the prostrating himself that he'd move around. Now, so what is it? Tosfos points out over here, we're going to learn later on in the Perek, that there's only certain places, only four places in Shemoneh Esrei you're supposed to bow. What kriyas and hishtachavah is. And by the way, hishtachavah, nowadays, it just means we bow at the waist. The older type of hishtachavah, which they did in the times in which they did, in the times of Tanakh, and apparently still in the times of the Mishnah, is actually bowing down full length on the floor. So then in the course of, you get up from that, and you're moving from one place to another. Anyway, Tosfos starts by bringing that we're not talking about a year during Shemoneh Esrei itself. We're talking about during the Tachnunim after Shemoneh Esrei. So during that alone, he would be doing so much Kriyas V'Yishtachavoyas that then he could end up in the other corner of the room. Tosfos then says, I don't like that explanation. No, what it means is you're not allowed to bow at the end of any other bracha other than Magen Avraham and Hatov Shem Kol L'Chano Elohidus. But you're allowed to bow in the middle of the brachas. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva would be bowing at various places in the middle of the brachas during Shemoneh Esrei, and the result was he would be going at it so long that you could find him in the opposite corner. There's a Chassidish Avorta on it that says that there was a certain Rebbe that once said, you know, when you get down to him, and Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 Talmidim, you don't think he could have found a million of them that are willing to daven with him by Rishos, that when he's davening the Tzibur, he has to go quickly? So he said a vort like this. He says, what it means is when Rabbi Akiva is davening with the Tzibur, in other words, with them, that they're davening on a level they should, and so is he, then he doesn't have to daven in particular length. But when there's a room full of people, but he's the only one actually davening, then he has to go at great length, because he has to be Milo or their tefillahs as well. Okay. Omer Rav Chiya Abba. More dinim about davening. A person should always daven in a house that has windows in it. The window is accomplished that this way the person is able to look up at Shemayim and focus on Hashem. It also helps that to orient him towards Yerushalayim. Shenema v'chavin psichon levigam. We find a pasuk by Daniel. You have a whole story in Daniel where the minister, the king's ministers, are trying to get him in trouble. So they get Dariavish to pass a law that nobody is allowed to daven to anybody other than Dariavish for the next 30 days. Daniel is still davening like he usually does, and they threw him in the lion's den. So you have a pasuk there that goes like this. So Daniel says goes home. And let's quote the whole pasuk, and then the Gemara is going to explain it phrase by phrase. V'chavin psichon lebi ilisei neged Yerushalayim. He had windows in his upper floor of his house facing Yerushalayim. And the zimnin tlosav yom who baruch al berchadi. Three times a day he would kneel down on his knees and mitzalo moed yekodem alatei, and he would daven and pray Hashem kol kavod to have an oven mitkan mitznah, just as he was doing up to that point. So now we're going to explain a couple of phrases in that pasuk. So he had windows in his house facing Yerushalayim, so we see you're supposed to have windows. The Rashash actually here points out an interesting thing. He says, the Rashash lived in Vilna his whole life. He says, in some of our big shuls in Vilna, they don't have windows at all. Or some of them, they have windows way high up on the wall. How does that fit with this? So he says that maybe this is talking about only when a person is davening in a private house. Maybe when a person is davening in a shul, it's less important. Obviously, I would just say that there should be windows in a shul as well. Because that's not always so easy. If the building is in, it's not always so easy to just stand, make a window, but whatever.
You need a certain amount of windows.
18
minutes.
So I think of all you should have 12 windows, ideally, but yeah. Well, it depends how the shul is built. You would think that a person can or should daven all day. No, we have in that same pasuk in the Neil, the Zimnin Tlosah, three times a day he would daven, so not the whole day. So some of the Mephoshim understand that what the Gemara is saying is you shouldn't be davening more than three times a day, because we looked before, you can only daven extra if you're going to be doing a Tefillah Nedava. If you're not going to be making it Nedava, you're not going to be able to add something extra in Shemoneh Esrei, then you have no business davening extra Tefillahs. Others learn that no, what the Gemara means is you could daven as much as you want. As we said before, halavai, she spell adam kolay and kolay. Halavai, a person would daven all day. What it means is, how do we know that three is the minimum number you mean? Maybe the Pnei Yeshua, for example, says, maybe it's like the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, every spare moment you're supposed to be learning Torah. Maybe every spare moment you're supposed to be davening. No, we see from the meal, that's only three times a day you require. You would think that maybe he only began this practice after he came to Golos. No, because the pasuk says, as he used to do up till this point. So we see that even before this point, even before he went into Golos, he was already davening. You would think a person can daven in whatever direction he wants. No, Talmud Lema neged Yerushalayim. The pasuk says that he was davening towards Yerushalayim. You would think, okay, you have to daven three tefillahs, but maybe you don't have to do them different times a day. You just do all three tefillahs one after the other. No, from the Furash Ayyid David. There we have, it says by David in Tillim, just in Erev Bavoyser B'Tzaharayim, in the evening, the morning, and the afternoon. Yoho Yashmiya Kola B'Tfilah. So you would think when a person is davening Shemana Esrei, he should raise his voice. No, from the Furash Ayyid Chana. There we have what it says by Chana. There's a Shenem of a Kola Lo Yishamea. As it says in the pasuk, when Chana is davening, that her voice was not heard. Yoho Yishal Adam Tzracha V'Achach. No, he didn't actually. He didn't hear her. If he heard her, he would have. He saw her standing and davening there at length. He didn't hear her words. Wait, we'll talk about that. Yoho Yishal Adam Tzracha V'Achach Hiskalul. You would think maybe a person should first ask for his needs and then praise Hashem. So in other words, maybe you should start with Atachonin, and then after you go through the middle brachas, then you start with praising Hashem, Elokeinu, Elokei Avotenu, etc. No, Kram Mefor Nashayidei Shloima. There we have Shloima clarifies the opposite. Shenema Lishmoya Ela Rina Ve'ela Tefillah. As it says, we ask Hashem to listen to the Rina and to the Tefillah. Rina Zu Tefillah. The word Rina means davening and praising Hashem. Rina, among other things, means song. So it means praising Hashem. Tefillah, and when he continues Tefillah, Zu Bakasha, this refers to the request for a person's need. The first three brachas, and besides that also, it doesn't just mean, there's actually two meanings of it. It means the first three brachas of Shemana Esrei. It also means the praises of Hashem that we say before that, in Pesukah de Zimra, in the brachas of Kriya Shema. And by the way, when we said before that Einam Nimli Spal Elamitach Simcha Shal Mitzvah, part of that is also the fact that we're saying Pesukah de Zimra, because again, we mentioned before that the Nevi'im would always end up with words of Shvach and Tanchumin for the Jewish people. So here also in davening, we have many many parts of davening that are words of comfort for the Jewish people, Kilo Yitzeh Hashem Asamoy and many others. So the bottom line is the Braita says you don't say any requests of your own after Emes V'Yatziv. You finish Emes V'Yatziv, you finish Gal Yisrael, and you go straight to Shemana Esrei. Abel Achara Tfila. But when it comes to after Shemana Esrei, after the Kesedah Shal Vidu, you have a Kapurim Omer. If a person wants to say afterwards that when it comes to Elokein Esrei, they want to say something even as long as the Vidu that you say in Yom Kippur, go ahead. You can say whatever you want at that point.
So during the Tfila.
So during the tefillah, One second. Let's learn the next line, and then we'll explain. Isma nami amar piva ashi amarav alpha pisha amru shoyl adam tzoracha b'shemei tefillah. Even though the chachamim said that a person can ask for his needs in the bracha shemei tefillah, but in bol loyma acha tefillah after the kaseder shema kaporim omer. But after davening, a person can say even to the extent of the vidur of Yom Kippur. Meaning like this: you have different levels. During the first three brachas, you're not allowed to ask for your needs at all. Which you're not allowed to ask for personal needs. You're allowed to ask the needs of the tzibur, and that's why we have that during Aseres Meitshuva, we say Zachreinu and Mikamoicha, because those are things for the tzibur. During the middle 13 brachas, you're allowed to ask for Yisrachim, each one in the appropriate bracha. So you need something, for example, you have a test that you're studying for, and you need a little extra help in it, so you dive into that in Apachonim. You have an extra thing that you're having trouble doing Tshuva for, so you add that in Hashizenu, etc. Shemei Tfila is the catch-all. You can put anything in there that doesn't belong in any other bracha, but it has to be fairly brief. It shouldn't overpower the bracha itself. And Tosfos talked about a couple of blocks ago that also it can't include shvachim of Hashem. It's supposed to be strictly asking Hashem for things. This is why Tosfos says, we said there that if you miss the same Talamotra in Baruch Aleinu, you can say it in Shemei Tfila. So why is it if you miss Masha Baruch HaMoed HaGeshem, you have to go back to the beginning of Shemei Esrei? Why can't you say it in Shemei Tfila? Because Masha Baruch HaMoed HaGeshem is a praise of Hashem. It's not a request for rain. Then, after Shemei Esrei, when you come to Elokein Esrei, you can say as long as you want. So those are the
different.
It's not a matter of preferable. You have your different choices. If you're just going to say something brief, then you can do it in the bracha. If you want to say something at greater length, then save it for the end of Shemana Esrei. There are many important halachas that you can learn from the Pesukim about Chana. You have the whole story where Chana is going over there to the Mishkan and davening, and Eli accuses her of being drunk, etc. There's a lot of dinim you can learn from those Pesukim. Number one, it says, V'chana himina beres al libo. Chana was speaking on her heart. So on her heart, mikana misbal, she's having libo. We see from that, a person has to have kavana in their heart. The pasuk says only her lips were moving. From here we see that a person, when he's davening, has to actually say the words with his lips. It's not enough to think them in your heart. You have to actually say them. In Tanya, in Perek Lamed Ches, the author ever talks about the reason is because the body needs birur. And the shama doesn't need birur so much, but the body does. Therefore, you have to be saying it with the lips, which are part of your body. The kola lo yishamea, it says her voice was not heard. Mikan she'osavag via kola b'tfilosef. And here we learn that you're not allowed to raise your voice while you're diving into an esrei. Vayachshaver elu l'shikora, the pasuk says, Eli thought that she was drunk. Mikan she'shikor, also is followed. From here we see that a drunk person is not allowed to daven. You have a difference in Shulchan Aruch that talks about how drunk they are, whether it's they're still able to talk in front of a king, or whether they're not able to, the kohen is not allowed to serve in the Beis Mikdash when he's drunk, but a person, any yid, is not supposed to daven when they're drunk. So if they're only shosuri, then they're not supposed to, but yebed, if they did, then they're yotzer. If they were shikur to the point where they couldn't even talk coherently in front of a king, then they're not yotzer.
You cannot be right from a kohen.
No, because one has to know what the kohen is avoid in the Beis Mikdash, not the same thing. Let's go on. Vayomer Eli ad moset ishtakor in the Vayomer. Eli says to her, how long are you going to be drunk? Get rid of your wine. The omer of Allah, the tan, the roya, the chaveret, zvarsh, gavash, ena hogun. From here we learn that if a person sees somebody else acting improperly, shetzarech lo hechicho, he has to give him mussar. As the Tosfos says, we're not talking about when the person is doing an issur d'oraisa. There we don't need to learn from the story of Eli and Chana. The Torah says, hecheach hechiach. Here we're talking about there's no issur d'oraisa involved, but still something improper. Then the pasuk says, "Vatan chana v'termel loy adoni." So before we continue with the dinim that we learned from these stukim, the Gemara is going to douse in a pasuk in the middle over there. It says that when Eli says to Chana, "How long are you going to be drunk?" So Chana answers and says, "Loy adoni, no, my master." So Omar Ulavi Tamer of Yisrael Chanina Omra Loy. It means that Chana is telling him there's a subtext in what she's saying. It's not just she's saying no, what you're saying is not right. She's saying Loy Odin after the Dover Zeh, you are not a master when it comes to this matter. The Loy Ruach Hakodesh Shora Alacha, Ruach Hakodesh is not resting on you. Shata Cheshdeni B'Dover Zeh, that you're choshing me in this matter, because it's not true. Ikadam, he was a kind of because one second, I'll explain. Ikadamri, another version, Hachri Amrlei, that she tells him, Loi Odenata, you're not an Oden, Lav Ika Shechina V'Ruach HaKodesh Kabach. Don't you have the Shechina and the Ruach HaKodesh with you? Shedantoni L'Kaf Choyva V'Loi Dantoni L'Kaf Chos, that you judge me unfavorably instead of favorably. Milo Yadaita De'ishach Chas Ruach HaMeichir Yayin V'Sheikha Loi Shasifi. Don't you realize that I'm a bitter in spirit, and I haven't drunk wine or any strong drink. So that's the lawyer doing it. There's a famous vote from the Vilna Gaon on this that says what happened was Eli had asked the Urim Ratumim, what's the deal? This woman is standing over here, davening at length. He thought she was drunk. Now, why is he thinking she's drunk? Rashi says because she was whispering her tefillah. And at that time, it wasn't common to do that. Marshall says, no, we just said it. You're supposed to whisper your tefillah. No, the reason Eli thought she was drunk, Marshall says, is because she was davening at great length, much longer than usual. So he thought, like, you have drunk people just sound babble along, you know, so maybe he thought. Anyway, the Vilna Gaon has a verse on it. He says, Eli asks the Urim Ratumim. We know how does the Urim Ratumim work. The letters would light up, and then he needs Ruach HaKodesh to put them in the right order. So the letters that lit up were a Hey, a Chof, a Resh, and a Shin. He reassembled them to form the word Shikoda, and that's why he thought the Urim Ratumim is telling me she's drunk. She's explaining to him, no, you don't have proper Ruach HaKodesh. If you had proper Ruach HaKodesh, you would realize it's supposed to actually be Kof Shin Resh Hey, which spells out either Kis Sarah, meaning that this woman is like Sarah, Sadekis, or Ksheira, that she's a kosher woman. And if you would realize that, then you wouldn't be accusing me of that. So then, okay, so again, the Pasuk says... So the Pasuk says, "V'yayin v'sheicha lo shasisi." She says, "I didn't drink wine or anything alcoholic." So what do we learn from that? Getting back to the halachas we learn from these pesukim, Amar Ablav mikan l'nechshag davash einboy. From here we learn that if somebody is suspected of not is suspected wrongly of something that he didn't actually do, shetzarech lahidia, he needs to inform the other person of the truth that I don't actually do it. You accuse me of being drunk. I'm explaining to you that I know that I don't drink. The Pasuk continues. Yeah. The pasuk continues, Al titen as a moskal of nei basliyal. The pasuk continues that Chana says to Eli, don't consider your maidservant to be a basliyal. Don't consider me to be a basliyal. A blial means blial, literally means bli oil, without the yoke of Hashem. Yeah, it's an expression that's used in various places in Chumash and the rest of Nach, you know, a person who's purdah oil, a person who throws off the yoke of Hashem for themselves. So what does that mean? From here we learn that if a person davens when they're drunk, it's as if they're worshiping Avodah Zarah. Why? Because here she says that you would be thinking that I'm a bas liyal if I daven while I was drunk. You have a pasuk in Parashas Re'eh. Yosu anoshim b'nei b'liyal mikirbecha. B'nei b'liyal have come out among you, and they convinced the whole city to become an irani dachas. Malahalam avodah zarah, afkan avodah zarah. So just like over there, talking about avodah zarah, over here also the same thing. If she were to daven while she's drunk, it would be like avodah zarah. How is it like avodah zarah? The Rashba says, because when a person is drunk, they're not always thinking clearly. They can easily confuse things. So yeah, just like we know, a person gets drunk, Oruch Haman, Baruch Mordechai. So the same thing. For example, a person, when they're drunk, may start having mistaken notions about Hashem. They may think, for example, that Hashem is like a person or whatever, Chas V'Shalom, and then it would be that's the beginning of Avodah Zarah. So therefore, okay.
That's considered
a level of Avodah Zarah. Yeah. It's the beginning of Avodah Zarah. It's to think of Hashem and that's just being like a person or something. Okay. Then the pasuk continues, Vayan Eli Vayomi L'chila Shalom. Eli answered her and said, go in peace. So what do we learn from that? Amar Abulazim. From here we learn that if somebody is choshed, somebody else, of something which it turns out he didn't do, he needs to appease him. He needs to ask him l'chila. So he's doing that. He's appeasing her by saying to her, l'chila shalom, go in peace. Not only that, he has to give him a bracha. Shenema, because the pasuk continues, that he continues, Hashem should grant your request. So he appeases her by saying l'chila shalom, go in peace, and then he's also giving her a bracha. It's part of the apology. Fayis means to tell the person something nice instead, to tell them something which will make them feel better. L'chila shalom. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to douse in some other psukim in that whole story, in Chana's tefillah. The pasuk says, "Vatider neder v'tomer Hashem tzvakas." She made a vow and she said, "Hashem tzvakas, if you see my pain and you give me a baby, etc." So, Amar Abulazim, Yom Shabara Akharish Baruch Hu Etzelamai, ever since Hashem created his world, Loi Hoya Adam Shekorel Akharish Baruch Hu Tzvakos, nobody ever called Hashem by the name Tzvakos. It's mentioned in a few psukim earlier, but this is the first time you actually have somebody saying a phrase that includes the word Hashem Tzvakos. Ad Shabbos Achanu Kharafet Tzvakos, until Chana comes and does that for the first time. Why? Amar Chana Lefnei Akharish Baruch Hu Rabbanu Shalom. Among all of the hosts and hosts upon a host, among all the many different things you created in your world, is it so hard in your eyes to give me one baby? What's it a marshal like? A human king made a party for his avadim. A poor person comes and stands at the door. He asks them, give me one piece of bread. Nobody paid him any attention. So he pushes his way in and makes it all the way to the king. Is it so hard in your eyes to give me one piece of bread? So the same way. Now you mentioned the other day that yes, the mimer, in the mimer of Basi Lagani, the original one for Yud Shvat, talks about the idea that Jewish people are called Tzivos Hashem, and it talks about over there about the name Tzvakos of Hashem, Vashgacha Brothers. The mimerim that we're learning for this year of Tavshin Chof and Tavshin Mem talk about this idea of why indeed the name Tzvakos was introduced in Chana's time. The gist of it is that Tzvakos refers to Hashem as he relates to the Nivroim. So therefore, in earlier times, in times of Moshe Rabbeinu, Yeshua, the Shoftim, whatever, they were on a higher level. They didn't yet need that name, because that name refers to Hashem as he relates to the Nevroim on a lower level, and they were on a higher level where that name is not necessary yet. In Chana's times, they were already starting to get to a lower level, therefore she has to start, therefore she's the first one to use that name. It's important. The Rebbe brings it in the Mimer of Basi Lagani of Tavshin Chof, and then expands on it in the Mimer of Tavshin Mem. Okay, the pasuk continues. In Ro'oi Sira, she says to Hashem, if seeing you will see. What's the double expression? Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Chana b'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ribono Shel Olam, im ro'oy mutam. If you see my pain and you give me a baby, then good. Then no problem. The im lav tira. If not, then you're going to see. I'm going to force the issue. Eilach ve'estater b'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and seclude myself with somebody else, with another man, in the presence of my husband Elkanah, v'chibin demistatanu mashkuli mei soja. Then I'm going to become a soja, and they're going to have to give me the soja water to drink. V'iata oisa turah saplaster. You're not going to be able to make your turah. Be false. Shenema v'niksav in Israel zara, where it says that if she's innocent of the charges, she wasn't mizana, then she's going to be cleansed, and she's going to have. The point is, she's saying, like, so to speak, I'm going to force the issue one way or the other. I'm going to get that baby.
The one thing is,
she's telling Hashem that that's my only other alternative. Therefore, don't let things come to that point. Give me a baby before it has to come to that point. Because I don't want that Hashem's name should have to be erased because of me. So that's all. Well, that is part of the thing of the Sota. But therefore, Hashem, give me a baby without needing that. By the way, different Achronim talk about different possibilities. How indeed could she do that without being over on an Isra? I mean, she's a Tzadekis. How is she going to be able to accomplish that without actually being over on the Isra of Yichud? So they talk about different possibilities. Maybe she's saying, I would be alone with two men, which is allowed me to Midaraisa, but it could still be a case of if the husband still suspects her of being Mizana with one or both of them, then he can still be Mekane to her with that. It can be when her husband is in town. It can be whatever. There's a few different ways.
Yeah, doesn't talk about that.
It doesn't say explicitly. We're learning it here in the Gemara. Yeah. So the question is, we're learning it from the fact that she says Imroi Sira. It didn't have the words Imroi Sira are in the pasuk. We're dashing again. Okay, so the question is, okay, now this worked out according to the opinion that says that the Sota, previously she had been barren, that now she's going to be remembered and have children. Well, then good. Shopping. Then it's good. We can understand what Chana meant. But according to the other opinion that says that no, if she didn't have children before, she's not going to have the bracha of children now. But if she was having children with pain before, then she'll have them easier now. If until now she was only having girls, now she'll have boys. If until now she was having dark-skinned children, now she'll have light-skinned ones. And if until now she's having short children, now she'll have tall children. So according to that, if she didn't have children, according to that, up to this point, she's not going to have now either, even after the verdicts of Israel Zara, according to that opinion, does not mean she's going to have babies. She's not going to have a baby. Then what are you going to say? The Tanya, as in fact, we learned in a Braita, there is a machlokas on that subject. When it says, V'nix of Israel Zara, Malamachim Hoysak Korin Efsedet Divir Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that means that if until now she was barren, she's going to be remembered and she's going to have a child, says Rabbi Shmuel. Omale Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that can't be. Im Kain Yochu Kola Akoris Kulam Bi Statru. If that were the case, then all barren women are going to do that. They're all going to do Stira and drink the maize soda and guarantee they're going to have a baby. V'zushal Akil Kulam Efsedet. And then only the ones who did not do wrong, who were not actually Mizana, are going to be remembered with children. Or there's another girsa over here, Zushal and Nistua Hipsida. The one who doesn't do Sira is going to lose out because she's trying to be more tzniyistic. No, Ella says Rabbi Akiva, Malamachim, Hosea, let us Tzav, let us Berabach. No, it just means that if she was until now having children with Tzav, she'll have them easier. Ksarim, let us Aruchim, Shchorim, let us Levonim, Echa, let us Shnaim. If until now she was only having one baby, she'll have two. So according to that opinion, my Imroi Sira, according to that, what is Chana saying by the words Imroi Sira? And the answer is, give a Torah, Koloshim, Me'adim. He would say that, okay, the Torah uses human, regular human speech. And in those times, it was common to say, you're definitely going to do something. You'd use a double expression. So here also she means if you're definitely going to see. There's no particular drasha in it. Marshall points out, why doesn't Rabbi Akiva say the same thing? He's asking Rabbi Shmuel, so all the Akoris are going to do that. So you should say the same thing. Every woman who's having a hard time having children is going to go and do Stira, etc. The answer is, he says, nobody's going to go through that whole rigmarole and erasing Hashem's name and everything just in order to have easier birth, or in order to have boys instead of girls or whatever. But to not have, when she doesn't have children at all, then she's really desperate, she may take extreme measures like that.
A woman is not obligated to have children.
She's not obligated, but nevertheless, she still wants them. You have a Gemara elsewhere that talks about that a woman still wants chutro moral kvura. She still wants that after 120 that she's going to have children to bury her. She still wants a kiyum in the world. Okay, because her husband already had children from Pnina. He already had 10 children from Pnina. So therefore, he didn't feel the need to daven for it so much. So Chana is the primary one davening. Anyway, okay, so anyway, you're asking how Chana is saying you should do this. The one answer is basically that she's not saying I'm going to do it, but she's saying, why should I lose out because I'm not going to do it? Similar to what we're saying over here. Okay. There's a different explanation related to that, by the way, is we know that if a woman hasn't had children for 10 years, then her husband has to divorce her. So on the other hand, if she's only having girls and not boys, that's not a valid reason to divorce her, and the same thing with any of the other ones. So therefore, when she's not having any children, then she might take desperate measures like this, even to the extent of having Hashem's name erased. Because, okay, you erase Hashem's name to make Sholem ben Ish l'Ishrei so that they can stay married. But not. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva can say so. To have a baby, then it's not appropriate that it should be that should happen as a result of it, because then somebody might actually try that, as opposed to if it's just that she's having children, just not the right kind that she wants or whatever. Then that's not that nobody's going to go and then go through the whole sort of procedure for that. The pasuk says, "But oni amosecha." She continues in her tefillah. If you see the pain of your maidservant, v'loisishachas amosecha. She continues, if you don't forget your maidservant, v'nasata la'amoscha, and you give your maidservant a baby. So Amar Rav Yosef b'Chanina Gimel amoset halolo lama. Why is she saying three times the word amoscha? So we're dashing them a lot in misa. Amar Chana l'fnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu. It means Chana is saying to Hashem, "B'bonu shleilim, shloisha bidke misa barosh beisha." There are three times, three mitzvahs, which because of them women are examined when it's a time of danger, like when she's giving when she's giving birth, and she could die in childbirth, Rahman al-Islam, as a result of being careless with one of them. But Amilosh Divke Misa, a different version is not Bidke check when she's checked into, but Divke when she's very close to death. Was I ever over on one of them? So therefore the misa that should accompany these things for being careless with them wouldn't apply to me. In fact, her name Chana stands for Chala Nida Ablochas Aner. So in that sense, I'm asking for a child. And Marsha explains also a different thing. She says, I'm a secha in the simple meaning, your maidservant. I'm your maidservant in that I faithfully did those to be mitzvahs, like a maidservant does for her master. And the verse is also that Yon Yaakov says, she's saying, like this, you're thinking maybe, Hashem, that you don't want me to have a baby for my benefit, because if I was careless with one of these mitzvahs, then I could die in childbirth. But the fact is, I've been careful with all of them. Therefore, it's not a favor to me to not have me have be able to have a child. So therefore, let me have it. Then she continues, you should give your maidservant a seed of people. So what does that mean? Doesn't it mean that she wants a boy? Because then it would say tzcharim. So my zera anoshim. Amarav gavra beguvrin. It means a man who is distinguished among other men. In other words, she wants not just stam a baby, she wants somebody who's going to be distinguished among the Jewish people.
Do it right.
Yeah. Shmuel says it means that this child, when he gets older, is going to anoint two people as king. Uman inu Shmuel, but Shol the David. First he anointed Shol, later on David. She was one of the seven Nevi'ahs, so therefore, yeah. She was one of the seven Nevi'ahs, she was in Jewish history, so there she had Nevi'ah, so she knew that in advance that her child is eventually going to grow up and do that. Rav Yechanan says that it means she's asking for a baby who's going to be the equivalent of two other people, Manu and Moshe Ba'aron, namely that this baby is going to be the equivalent of Moshe and Aaron. She named Moshe Ba'aron B'chorin of Shmuel B'chorin of Shmuel. So we see that Shmuel is considered the equivalent of Moshe and Aaron. V'rabbonon Amri, Zera Anoshim means Zera Shemuvla Bein Anoshim. She wants a baby that will blend in with other people. Meaning, in other words, he also of Dimi. I'm when Rav Dimi came, he clarified, what does that mean? She's saying, like Oruch, like Gutz, I don't want him to be too tall or too short. But like Katan, but like Alam, I don't want him to be too skinny or too fat. But like Socher, but like Gicher, not too pale and not too red, or the other way around, whatever, not an odd skin color. But like Chacham, but like Tipish, and not exceptionally smart. In order, Rashi says this way, he won't get an Ein Hara, and not exceptionally stupid either. You should just be average, in other words. And with that averageness, he became Shmuel Hanavi. So you see what an average person can accomplish. Okay. Then the pasuk continues. So what happens? Eventually the pasuk says that she had the baby. Then it says she nursed him for 2 years. And when he's 2 years old, she brings him to the Mishkan to live by Eli.
But she promised
that she's gonna give him to Hashem on the Sash of Hashem Kol Yimechayev. Yeah, the Gemara is not doubting it because not. So what happens is like this. So later on, so when she brings Shmuel, so you have the pasuk says that she says to Eli, "Ani ho isha hanitzeves im chobazeh. I am the same woman who was standing together with you over here." So what does that mean? Here we learn, you're not allowed to sit within 4 amas of somebody who's davening. Meaning, in other words, that Yehanitzeves Imcha implies that she was standing and davening, and Avi was also standing. So therefore, so we see you can't sit near somebody who's davening. There's a couple of other ways of learning. Tosfos brings that the word imcha over here is spelt with a hey at the end, ayin mem cha hey, rather than usually the ayin mem langacha. So we learn from that, therefore, that within 4 amas he wasn't sitting, he was sitting 5 amas away, thus the hey.
Why did she have to tell him that he knew that?
No, because we're learning a din from that pasuk. We're learning a din from that pasuk that we see that he was sitting in the 5th amah, or that he was standing because she was standing. Tosfos Arosh says yet another thing. The word zeh is gematria 12, so it represents 4 amas in front of him, 4 amas on either side, and 4 in the back. So 4, 4, and 4. Okay, but that's the thing. Okay, but imcha means with you. Okay, so you're not allowed to sit within 4 amas of somebody who's davening. This is broad in Shulchan Aruch. You have somebody who's davening Shmoneh Esrei. You're not allowed to sit within 4 amas in front of him, actually not as far as you can see, or next to him, or even behind him. Why? There's a couple of different reasons that the Mephoshim give. The Alter Rebbe brings the one that the Taz says, because it's a Makom Kaddish, and it's not appropriate to be sitting there. The place, the 4 amas where the person is davening, is a Makom Kaddish. However, that's if you stand sitting over there. If you're sitting over there and saying Shema, or saying words of Torah, or davening, or whatever, then you're allowed to. Then the pasuk says, "Awanara hazayis falol." See, the pasuk says that she says to Eli, "I davened regarding this child." So what's going on over here? What happened? Amar Ablaz, Shmuel murder halacha lifnei Rabbi Hava. What happened was Shmuel had paskin halacha in front of his rebbe, in front of Eli. What happened was, the pasuk says, there's a couple of psukim earlier, it says they shechted, the previous pasuk actually, says they shechted the ox, which she had brought as a korban, and they brought the boy to Eli. So what's the connection? What does one have to do with the other? Now, what happened was like this. What happened was Eli was telling the other people over there, go call a koyan to come shech, because he held that only a koyan can shech the korban. Chazanu Shmuel to have a mahadri b'as a koyin l'mishchat. Shmuel, this little boy, sees that they're looking around for a koyin to shech the korban. Amalahu lamalahu l'chul aduri b'as a koyin. So he asks them, why do you need to bother searching around for a koyin l'mishchat to shech? Shechita b'zorik sherin. The fact is, a zor is allowed to shech korbanos also. I threw the kamei to Eli, so they bring Shmuel in front of Eli. Amalei menolacha. So Eli says, where do you know that from? The Pasuk doesn't say the Kohen should shech the korban. The Ikrivu HaKohenim Ksiv. The Pasuk says the Kohenim should offer the korban, meaning sprinkling the blood. Only from Kabbalah and on do the Kohenim have to do.
How do you know
Ikrivu
is not also...
Because Ikrivu, because it says V'shochat ben abokah l'fnei Hashem v'Ikrivu. So Eli says, you're saying very good. You're all 2 years old and you already know this being. But you just passed in halacha in front of your rebbe. Now, Eli was not really his rebbe yet because he had just come to the Mishkan for the first time. But Tosfos says Eli was the gadol hador and he's coming to learn from him, so he's already considered his rebbe. And b'chol amur halacha b'fnei rabbe, chayiv misa. A person passed in halacha in front of his rebbe, chayiv misa, b'dei shemayim. Therefore, after Chana b'katzav hakamei, so Chana now came and was crying out in front of Eli when she says, Elanara zeis faloti, she's saying, Aniho isha anitzeves imcha b'zeh, I'm the same woman who was standing over here a couple of years ago and davening, so have rachmanos on my child. Amalo shavki li de'enshe, so he tells her, leave me alone, he'll get his punishment, or be in a rachmi, but then I'll daven to Hashem, v'yahoyv loch rabamine, and I'll give you a child greater than him. She says, Amrlei, she says, no, Elanara says, Falopi, I daven for this child. I want the child that came from my tefillah. I don't want a child that comes from your tefillah. And therefore, please daven for him. And sure enough, Eli was moichel on his cupboard, and Shmuel was not punished. He was 2 years old, but still, he had the intelligence to be able to. We're talking about punishment bidei adam can only be when he reaches a certain age. But punishment bidei shemayim depends how smart he is. So therefore, this is bidei shemayim he's talking about. So there's a whole thing. A murder halacha b'fnei rabbi chayiv misa is bidei shemayim. So he's only 2 years old, but he's already on the level to understand. With that said, you have some portion that say that maybe that part of the story happened later when he was older. Whatever the case, the point is, and one thing we see, by the way, that even though Chana davened that he shouldn't be an exceptional chacham, that's part of her tefillah to that extent, and he actually was chacham more than average. Okay.